wheat. It's been part of the human diet for over 10,000 years. Worldwide, wheat is grown on more than 605 million square acres, larger than any other crop, and trade in wheat is greater than for all other crops combined. Wheat provides more nutrition for humans than any other food source and is the most important source of carbohydrates in most countries around the world. But is it safe? Over the past 50 years, speculation that genetic changes to improve farming techniques and thus profitability have lessened the nutritional value and may even be causing an epidemic of obesity and other medical problems.
Sundown in the Paris of the prairie, wheat kings of all treasures buried, and all you hear are the rusted breezes pushing around the weather vane Jesus.
The Food Nation Radio Network spoke with Dr. William Davis, a cardiologist and author of the book Wheat Belly. Here's Elizabeth Doherty.
I came across your website and I had to ask you because, you know, everybody thinks that the problems with wheat that people are having have to do with gluten intolerance, but it looks like it's a lot more than that, isn't it?
Absolutely right. There are indeed people who have abnormal immune responses to gluten proteins. So some of these people have celiac disease, for instance. 1% of the population has celiac disease. Another few percent have gluten sensitivity. That is, they can have diarrhea or bowel cramps, or joint pains from the gluten, but not as bad as a person with celiac. Maybe that's 10% of the population.
Right.
The problem is, there's another 90% who have other problems. So a very big problem to be aware of is there's a protein in wheat called gliadin. Gliadin is actually a subpart of the gluten molecule, but gliadin is an opiate. So it's digested in the human gastrointestinal tract with a smaller group of proteins that actually bind to the opiate receptors in the brain. Now, it doesn't provide relief from pain, obviously, nor a euphoria or hallucination, say like heroin or morphine. It only triggers appetite. So when humans consume this gliadin protein in wheat and get exposed to this opiate, the average person increases their calorie consumption 440 calories per day.
Wow.
365 days per year. Well, if you and I get exposed to this food that increases our appetite, we get fat. And if you do that for several years, you gain 30, 50, 70 pounds, you become diabetic. So one component, just one, there are many others, of this modern thing called wheat is this gliadin protein that's an opiate appetite stimulant.
What happened to the wheat? I mean, back when our parents were growing up, they didn't have these issues. What happened?
Exactly right. So the wheat we have today is not the wheat that our mom and dads or grandparents have. So the wheat of 1960 was a 4.5 foot tall traditional plant. The wheat of 2012 is 18 inch tall, high yield, short stocky, what they call a semi-dwarf strain. So there were extensive genetics changes introduced into wheat in the 1960s and 1970s. And this was done for good purpose. It was done to try to help solve world hunger. Well, they did that. They converted this low-yield plant to a very high-yield plant. Yield per acre went up about tenfold. Well, since then, those changes were introduced. There have since been even more extensive changes introduced into this plant. The problem here is that agribusiness and genetics feels it is their right to change these foods extensively to suit their agenda, which is usually yield per acre, year over year, consistent production, or resistance to drought, or some other agricultural need, but there's no questions asked about suitability for human consumption. They can just sell it to you tomorrow, put it on your supermarket shelves, and if there's a problem, we won't even know about it because they didn't even tell you they changed it.
Well, here's what's interesting about that, because as we've been studying genetically modified foods, the modern day ones, everyone said, well, wheat was not genetically modified because, you know, other countries wouldn't buy it from us. But what you're saying is it kind of predates the modern genetic modification, and they did sort of a rudimentary form of modification back 30 years ago or more.
Exactly right. The techniques used to change modern wheat predate modern gene splicing and genetic modification. So they use hybridization techniques, multiple crossbreeding, introduction of unique genes from unrelated species. More recently, they've been using the techniques of mutagenesis, that is chemical gamma ray or X-ray mutagenesis, the
purposeful induction
of mutations. Yes, very crude, imprecise techniques that you cannot control. So you generate multiple mutations. So for instance, the Clearfield wheat, now grown on 1 million acres, this is a form of wheat that is resistant to the herbicide Beyond. So just like Roundup Ready corn, you can spray Beyond all over your wheat field, and it kills the weeds, but not the wheat. But how did they make it resistant to the herbicide? They did this by chemical mutagenesis. They exposed the wheat embryo or seed to a chemical called sodium azide and induced multiple mutations. They make this mutant form of wheat, sell it to you tomorrow. And no questions asked about all the unique proteins and other things in this plant that humans consume. We see new allergies in children. We see acid reflux. We see weight gain. We see opiate effects. We see worsening of inflammatory diseases like rheumatoid arthritis, polymyalgia rheumatica, and lupus. We see migraine headaches. We see all kinds of health problems because these things were not tested before they were released.
In case you're just joining us, we're talking with Dr. William Davis, author of Wheat Belly, about issues in the wheat supply today. I am blown away by some of the things you've just said. What do you suggest people do? I mean, should they eat wheat alternatives? What should they do?
Well, there's a second layer to all this. So this corrupt message of eat more healthy whole grains, cut your fat, that has led to the world's worst epidemic of weight gain and obesity, has also had other effects. And one of the effects is it's destructive to the human pancreas. So many of us get to age 45, 50, 60, and we no longer have normal pancreatic function. So we're very intolerant to carbohydrates. A lot of this was caused by modern wheat. So first step, eat no wheat. Eat nothing made of modern wheat. So that means no breads, pasta, cookies, cakes, pretzels, crackers, etc. Breakfast cereals. So we go a step further. If you want ideal health, we don't eat junk carbohydrates. And this means, by the way, no gluten-free foods. So gluten-free foods are made with what I call junk carbohydrate ingredients. They're made with rice starch, tapioca starch, potato starch, and corn starch. So we don't want to replace one problem, modern wheat, with another problem, gluten-free junk carbohydrates, because those make us gain weight. And particularly in those of us who have had pancreatic destruction from this lifestyle of healthy whole grains for many years. So we cut out wheat. We don't indulge in junk carbohydrates such as the gluten-free foods, and we eat real food. We don't worry about fat. So we have all the fish, poultry, beef, and pork we want. We have vegetables, avocados, olives, olive oil. People who can eat dairy should eat dairy, including things like cheese and cream. We return to real food. Now, some people say this is inconvenient. They're going to have company on Friday. They want to have pizza, or they're going to have a birthday party for their 8-year-old. One of the things I do is I show you how to recreate those foods using recipes without wheat flour and without the gluten-free junk carbohydrates. We can recreate, for instance, muffins and cookies and brownies using ground almonds and coconut flour and other truly healthy ingredients.
Nice. That's great. Well, I can't wait to read your book, and I think this is really cutting-edge information. How did you get all of this research that you used for your book?
Well, Elizabeth, I wish I could tell you. It came to me all at once. I had to stumble my way here. So 22 years ago, I became diabetic, because I made the grave error of listening to some of my colleagues who were advocating a strict low-fat diet with a diet full of healthy whole grains, fruits, and vegetables.
Right.
I was jogging 3 to 5 miles a day. I became diabetic with fasting blood sugars of 160.
Wow.
So I had to find my way back from that nutritional mess. Well, another thing is I practice preventive cardiology now. I used to practice lots of procedures, but I started to get very discouraged by that because it's a fast, temporary Band-Aid. So I tried to understand how this disease is caused. And one of the things you quickly learn is the most common cause for heart disease is the small LDL particle, excess of small LDL particles. You also learn quite quickly they're caused by grains. This is quite clearly in the medical literature as well. And if you want full control over heart disease risk, you cannot be diabetic or pre-diabetic. So the people coming through here, the vast majority of my office looking for heart disease prevention, have oodles of small LDL particles and are pre-diabetic or diabetic, 80%. So I used this simple fact, 2 slices of whole wheat bread raise blood sugar higher than 6 teaspoons of table sugar
wow.
in all tables of glycemic index. So
yeah.
I asked my patients to remove all wheat. They'd come back 3 months later, and their blood sugar would indeed be much lower. Small LDL would be much lower or gone, but they'd tell me all these other stories. I lost 35 pounds. I lost 3 inches off my waist. My blood pressure is normal. My migraine headaches are gone. My acid reflux is gone. My rheumatoid arthritis is so much better. I stopped 2 drugs. My asthma has gotten so much better. I threw away 2 inhalers. My chronic sinus infections have stopped altogether. I don't take antibiotics anymore. In other words, when I started as a simple effort to reduce small LDL particles for the purposes of heart disease prevention and getting rid of high blood sugars, turned into this experiment in transformations in health.
Doc, a quick question for you. Have you been able to show any connection between wheat consumption and psychological illnesses as well?
Big, Mike. Big connection. So it's the gliadin protein for the most part, the same thing that stimulates appetite. So it stimulates appetite by binding to the opiate receptor. So it does have capacity. Small polypeptides do have the capacity to cross the blood into the brain via the blood-brain barrier. So it can cause appetite stimulation. In people susceptible to the effect, it causes obsessions with food, constant 24-hour-a-day obsessions with food. And that shows up as bulimia and binge eating. It triggers the manic phase of bipolar illness. It triggers paranoia and hearing voices, auditory hallucinations in people with schizophrenia. It triggers behavioral outbursts and difficulty with attention in children with ADHD and autism. In other words, the expression varies with your susceptibility, but it's the mind effects of the gliadin protein. That alone is an incredibly fascinating area, very crazy area, but it's very fascinating.
Just because of the opiate-type behavior that it displays, correct?
Yeah. Now, there's also reports coming out, not about the gliadin effects, but the gluten effects. And we have now cerebellar ataxia, where the cerebellum in the base of the brain is destroyed. You see it on an MRI and causes difficulty with balance, and you start to wet yourself, and it can be fatal. Peripheral neuropathies, half of all peripheral neuropathies are caused by consumption of wheat. That is unexplained peripheral neuropathy, which is very common. And now the Mayo Clinic has described what they call gluten encephalopathy, dementia from wheat. This was diagnosed at autopsy. Last I checked, autopsy was not a good way to make a diagnosis.
No, it's not.
What about cultures that eat a lot of rice?
Well, they have a whole different kind of problem. I'm actually part Japanese. My mother was Japanese, so I know exactly how they eat.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, the Japanese don't eat much rice. People think that they eat small quantities of rice. Rice is a much more benign grain. Let me put aside that recent report of the arsenic found in rice.
Yeah.
It's a whole other issue.
Right.
And rice is also the increasing recipient, by the way, of genetic modification. So that introduces a whole other level of uncertainty. But putting all of that aside, rice is a much more benign grain. It is essentially a starch. You can make yourself quite diabetic, by the way, by overeating rice. So the key with what I call non-wheat grains, such as rice, wild rice, brown rice, white rice, millet, sorghum, buckwheat, and not overconsume them. They don't have all the adverse aspects of modern wheat, such as appetite stimulation, but they still can raise blood sugar.
Okay.
And so what I tell most people is you can eat them, just go light on portion size. Most people can tolerate about a half cup without getting high blood sugars.
So what you're really saying is people should eat more vegetables and healthy proteins.
Yeah, you know, the recipients, the greatest recipients of most of the genetic changes, whether it's genetic modification or the techniques that predate genetic modification, have been grains. Grains have been the foods that have been most changed and are the most uncertain and most potentially deleterious to our health. So it is essentially getting rid of grains or at least minimizing grains such as non-wheat grains. But the biggest problem of all is the wheat. If people who hear this just did one thing, that is eat no wheat, I think you'll be shocked by the transformation in health.
So tell us about, you have a blog. Tell us about that.
So it's Wheat Belly Blog.
Uh-huh.
It's simply meant to supplement the conversation, but it's also the place where I post a lot of these recipes.
Recipes where people don't have to eat wheat and they can still feel satisfied and happy with what they're eating.
Yeah, you know, I've concentrated on trying to recreate the things people miss. So I haven't concentrated on telling people how to bake salmon or steam asparagus. Do things like pizza and muffins and brownies and cookies and making ice cream and all the things that people miss because, you know, it is a social world with children and entertaining and families.
Right.
And if all you have is salad and baked salmon, that gets kind of
depressing.
Old after a while.
Yeah.
And kids are going to want the pizza. People are going to want the cheesecake. So I show how to make those things without wheat, without junk carbohydrates.
And what's the name of the blog again?
Wheatbellyblog.com.
Wheatbellyblog.com. I really appreciate your time and talking to us today. This is a puzzle we're trying to navigate our way through here. So thanks for joining us, and I hope people will get your book. Can they get it on Amazon?
Yes, they can, or Barnes & Noble, all the usual places.
Excellent. Well, we've been talking with Dr. William Davis. You've been listening to Food Nation Radio Network. We'll be right back.